Good day, everybody. Welcome. Glad you could join us. It's good to see you all this morning. I see a new brother or two there, one from Romania. Welcome. Good to see you today. Good afternoon to you as it's morning here. It's a chilly morning here in Colorado. Got a little snow. This is our snow season. Well, I hope you all had a wonderful, blessed weekend and had a great gathering with the saints yesterday. And I'm glad you're here as we continue to study the story of our Lord Jesus. So, remember where we have been. It all started with God creating everything. And then he put a man in the garden and said, reproduce, multiply, fill the earth, cultivate, protect this garden, make it thrive, make it grow, enjoy all this, rule and subdue it. Gave him a woman to come alongside and help him. And then the snake showed up and led them all astray. And you remember the promise given to the snake was that there would be a seed of the woman who would crush him one day. So we're still waiting for that seed in the storyline so far. Then we see the world filled with evil people. God destroys the world with the flood, except for one family. Gives them the same charge, reproduce, multiply, fill the earth, subdue the earth, go conquer, make civilization, and on. The world becomes full of people again, and it's still corrupted. This time, God punishes them by separating their language and breaking up the unity that they had. But the story remains that we have the promise of the seed is going to crush the serpent and evil abounding, idol worshipers all over the place, people rejecting the one true God. It seems like the snake has the upper hand. But then in Genesis 12, God shows up to one idol worshiper named Abram, and he says, pack up your things, pack up your family, go to a place I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will make your name great. Anyone who belittles you, I will curse. Anyone who blesses you, I will bless. And in you, Abram, all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abram obeyed, and as the story unfolds, we have these promises to this man, Abram. We're still waiting for the seed to come and crush the serpent. Where's it all heading? Well, today we pick up in Genesis chapter 15, and we read this. After these things, the Lord's message came to Abram in a vision. Here's what the Lord said. Fear not, Abram. I am your shield. Now, what does a shield do? What do you use a shield for? To protect you from enemy fire, right? Well, think about what we saw in chapter 14, for instance, and really even chapter 13. Remember in 13, was it 13 or 14? Anyway, when Abram hands over his wife to Pharaoh, God protected Abram's wife. He protected Sarai, so that Pharaoh didn't lay a hand on him. Then, remember when you had the Battle of the Kings, 4 verses 5, and caught up in that skirmish was Lot, Abram's nephew, and the victorious kings took Lot, and so Abram sent out his soldiers, and they triumphed and rescued the nephew and got all their possessions back. That was the Lord's protection. And then Melchizedek comes and blesses Abram and says, the Lord has protected you from your enemies, given you victory over your enemies. And that's why God says, Abram, I am your shield. You do not need to fear any opponent because I, the Lord Almighty, the one who created everything, I have your back and your front and your sides. I will protect you. Well, Abram has seen evidence of that. So that's probably not too difficult for him to believe that God will protect him. He's just shown him in some remarkable ways. But what about this next promise? I will reward you in great abundance. Well, what does he mean by that? Certainly, Abram has already experienced great wealth. But what God meant, what Abraham was really hoping for, the promise that made the greatest impact on Abram that he most wanted was children. God said, you're going to have more children than there are stars in the sky, than grains of sand on the seashore. You can't count high enough to count all the offspring I'm going to give you. In fact, he says, look around at all the land. I'm going to give it all to your descendants. That's going to be your great reward. That's the great nation. And how many children does Abraham have, or Abram have right now? Zero. Zero. So I'm going to give you a great reward. And Abraham says, okay, cool. Could we start with one? You're promising me countless numbers of children. Can we start with one? I have zero. Can we have one? Abram says, oh, sovereign Lord, what will you give me since I continue to be childless? And my heir is Eliezer of Damascus. Look, I have this, this servant boy who stands now to inherit my wealth. He is going to be the head of the clan after I'm gone. You haven't given me any children. It's a servant. So how can I know that you really are going to do this? Abram added, since you have not given me a descendant, then look, one born in my house will be my heir. But look, the Lord's message came to him. This man will not be your heir, but instead a son who comes from your own body will be your heir. God says, no, 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 don't think for a moment that it's going to be that servant boy. Your body, you are going to procreate. You are going to conceive a son. Not adopt, not have a servant. You are going to actually have a son that you have conceived, and he is going to be your heir. The Lord took him outside and said, gaze into the sky and count the stars if you are able to count them. Then he said, so will your descendants be. And Abram believed the Lord, and the Lord credited it to him as righteousness. So nothing has changed yet. Abram says, look, I don't see how this is going to work. I don't have any children. You keep saying these promises, but how do I know? And God says, I'm telling you, you're going to have a child. And Abram says, okay, I believe you. He goes out and looks at the stars and starts counting and says, okay, I can, you know, count thousands in my sight, hundreds of thousands maybe, if I wanted to count that high, and I'm just barely getting a small portion of the stars in my view. Okay, that's a lot. I believe you, Lord. I'll trust you. And God takes that trust and puts it to Abram's account as righteousness. As you know from the New Testament, the Apostle Paul makes a big deal of this. But it's not really highlighted as a big deal here. It's just a statement in passing. Abram believed. God says, I'm going to count that as righteousness. The Lord said to him, I am the Lord who brought you out from Ur of Chaldeans to give you this land to possess it. And now the doubt comes in again. Abram said, O sovereign Lord, by what can I know that I am to possess it? Okay, you promised me all this land, but how do I know? His faith is weak. You know, we uphold Abram, later Abraham, as the giant man of faith. And indeed, in chapter 22, he proves his faith in a way that boggles the mind. It's inconceivable to many of us to think about being willing to sacrifice your own son. That's how much faith Abram will grow to have. But here and earlier in the story, he still struggles with doubt. He believes so much that it's credited to him as righteousness. And then God makes another statement of promise. He says, but how do I know? I have no children. It's going to be hard for my offspring to occupy all this land when I don't have any offspring. So here's what the Lord does for him. The Lord said to him, take for me a heifer, a goat, and a ram, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. So Abram took all these for him and then cut them in two and placed each half opposite the other. But he did not cut the birds in half. All right, so this seems strange to us. Notice that God didn't give Abram any instructions on what to do. He just said, take these animals. So Abram goes and gets these animals, and then he just cuts them in two and puts them on. You got half of the animals on this side, half on this side with a path down the middle. Now, again, this is very strange to us, but it's not strange to Abram. This was a standard covenant-making practice. And I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago, did I not, Meredith Klein. You should look up Meredith Klein. He was a professor, I forget now, was he at Westminster East? No, I forget where he was. Anyway, he did extensive work on the suzerain vassal treaties and covenants, and the Hittite covenants, those kind of things, and gathered all this information to describe how covenants were made in antiquity. And you can find a lot of it just free on PDFs. And I can't remember. It seems like I heard some audio lecture sometime, but I may be misremembering that. But to say it fairly briefly, what would often happen is you cut the animals, you create this path down the middle of the severed pieces, and then if I was making a treaty with you or a covenant with you, if I'm a nation and you're a nation, or just me and you, we would cut the animals up and then I would walk through the middle of those separated animal bodies and you would walk through the middle. So I would walk through, come to your side, you would walk through and come to my side. And what we are saying to one another is that if I fail to keep my end of this bargain, if I fail to keep the stipulations of this covenant, so we're making a covenant. You'll let me use your land to farm, and I will give you 20%. And so we cut a covenant. If either of us goes back on our word, we're calling upon the gods to bring the covenant breaker to the same end as these animals. You get what I'm saying? So I kill these animals and I cut them in two. And by walking through, I'm saying, if I don't do what I say I'm going to do here, may the gods cut me up like these animals. All right, I'm seeing some chatter here that the video is messing up again. Are we back? Is the video back to normal now? Rob says, I was trying to recall the particular name for the vassal treaty covenant. Yes, suzerain, suzereignvassal, vassal. If you look that up and look up Meredith Klein, Kline, I think you'll find some good info. All right. Okay, on your end now? Good. All right, so this was a common practice. Abram cuts these animals. Remember, Abram has said, how do I know? How do I know you're going to give this land to my descendants? How do I know they're going to possess it? And God says, bring me these animals. And so Abram brings them, and he cuts them all in pieces, except the birds. I'm not sure why he didn't cut the birds. When birds of prey came down on the carcasses, Abram drove them away. When the sun went down, Abram fell sound asleep, and great terror overwhelmed him. Then the Lord said to Abram, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a foreign country. So you're going to have descendants, you're going to have offspring, and they're going to go to a foreign land, and they're going to be strangers there, and they will be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years. Now, just think about that. Yes, Abram, you are going to have children. And they're going to grow into a people, and they're going to go to this land, and they're going to be in, they're going to be slaves for 4 centuries. Oh, the patience that God is expecting Abram to practice, and faith. I mean, this is asking a lot of Abram. Yeah, you're going to have children. They're going to be slaves for 400 years. But I will execute judgment on the nation that they will serve. Afterward, after 400 years, they will come out with many possessions. So you're going to be a great nation, Abram. Your name's going to be great. I'm going to give all this land to your offspring in 4 centuries. But when they come out of this slavery, they are going to be wealthy people. What about Abram? As for you, you will go to your ancestors in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation, your descendants will return here. And this is interesting. For the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its limit. Okay. Just think about what God said. Abram is now in the land of the Amorites. Okay? He's right now in the land of the Amorites. And God says, look around you. All of these descendants, I mean, all of this land is going to belong to your descendants. But your descendants are going to go down to another land, be enslaved for 400 years. Then they're going to come out with great wealth because I'm going to punish the nation that enslaved them. That's when they will return here. And now he adds, the reason for the 400-year delay is the sin of the Amorites has not yet reached its limit. There is a bigger story going on here than just Abram. God has a plan to punish the Amorites by means of Abram's descendants who are going to be enslaved for 400 years. So the timing of this enslavement is to give time for the Amorites to continue to commit wickedness and idolatry and to deserve God's wrath, which he will use Abram's descendants to come and punish. All the way through this entire Old Testament narrative, there's a bigger story. God is weaving together all these things, all these themes, telling a bigger story. It's fascinating. Think about. All right, but so how is this supposed to guarantee to Abram that this is all going to come true? Because now we're looking 4 centuries in the future. How does Abram supposed to know this? When the sun had gone down and it was dark, a smoking fire pot with a flaming torch passed between the animal parts. So you remember all those animals cut with the path down the middle? Now Abram's asleep and this flaming pot, this flaming torch kind of hovering in the air goes between the animal parts. So based on what I told you a second ago or a moment ago, this is a covenant between God and Abram, right? The flaming torch represents the Lord. And that torch moves in between. He walks down or floats down the path like a drone or something. Floats down this path between the severed animal parts. Based on what I told you a moment ago, what would we expect to happen next? Let me give you a moment. What would you expect to happen next? Right? The representative of the Lord goes through the animal parts. Now what are we waiting for? Anybody? Did I say it clearly enough? I know that's when we were having a little bit of video issues. So I don't know if it got lost in there. And I know there's a little delay here. Well, I'm assuming somebody's going to get it. Even if you don't, let me tell you. You would expect in a normal covenant-making ceremony that the other party would walk through. We would expect Abram to walk through the animals. But there's something unique about this covenant that the Lord's making with Abram. It's one-sided. At this point, there are no stipulations put on Abram. God says, I'm going to do this for you, Abram, and I am going through the animal parts, and I'm making a covenant saying, if I do not fulfill this promise to you, if I don't give this land to your descendants, then may the gods slay me and cut me in half like these animals. Of course, there is no God higher than God. So he's basically putting his deity on the line. And you're not supposed to ask the question, is that even possible? That's not the point. He is saying it. May the gods sever me like these animals if I don't do this. That is the surest way. It's remember the writer of Hebrews talks about God couldn't swear by anybody above himself, so he swore by himself kind of thing. That's what's going on here. God is saying to Abram, if I am God, this cannot fail to come to pass. I will stop being God, which is impossible, but that's not the point. I will stop being God if this doesn't come true. That day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham. To your descendants, I give this land from the river of Egypt to the great river, the Euphrates River, to the land of the Kenizzites, Kedemites, Hittites, Perizzites, Raphaites, Amorites, Canaanites, Girgashites, and Jebusites. Because Abram knew how covenants were cut, then that's literally the word in the Hebrew, to cut a covenant by cutting the animals, Abram understood what God was saying. And it mattered. It mattered to Abram. Dale says, you described a typical blood covenant parity treaty with Abram. God made a self-assumed covenant. Abram slept while God performed or cut the covenant. I think I would agree with that. So what is the promise, guarantee of this promise that God gives? It's cutting this covenant. So now whenever Abram begins to doubt, he can reflect back on this experience and say, wait a minute. I don't know how, I don't have any children yet. I'm getting old. My wife is barren. Can I have children? Well, God walked through the pieces. I saw him go through the pieces. He put his own deity on the line. May I be destroyed like these animals if I don't fulfill this promise. Okay, he's gonna do it. You would think that would be the end of the story. Abram's going to trust him, and here we go. And he's just going to keep making love to his wife and expect any day now she's going to say, I'm pregnant, Abram. I'm pregnant. Well, that's not what happened. Chapter 16, now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not given birth to any children. She had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. Sarai said to Abram, since the Lord has prevented me from having children, perhaps sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have a family by her. This seems so strange to us. It's not how we do things, but this was very common in that day. This handmaiden of Sarai, Abram could impregnate her. Sarai could take that child as her own, and he could become the heir. And Abram's going to rise to the challenge and say, no way, no how. I have the covenant ceremony in my head. I remember what I saw. God has promised me. I trust him. Nope, Sarah, we're not doing that. We're just going to wait till you get pregnant. Nope, that's not what happened. Abram did what Sarai told him. Does that sound familiar? Abram did what Sarai told him. Somebody? What does that sound like to you? Dean Floyd says, my wife mentioned how Jesus is the third temple the Jews destroyed. Right then, a man walked past her carrying a shofar and blew it. Interesting. Yeah, Lewis got it. Adam followed the lead of his wife, and he ate the forbidden fruit. And now Abram follows the appeal of his wife instead of holding fast to what God had told him. Guys, don't do that. You are the head of the home. You were responsible. Don't let your wives create doubt. So Abram had lived in Canaan for 10 years. Sarai, Abram's wife, gave Hagar, her Egyptian servant, to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she became pregnant. Once Hagar realized she was pregnant, she despised Sarai. Of course that's going to happen, right? And Sarai said to Abram, you have brought this wrong on me. See what happens? Now Sarah's upset. I gave my servant into your embrace. When she realized she was pregnant, she despised me. May the Lord judge between you and me. The Lord's going to get you for this. Abram said to Sarai, she's your servant. She's under your authority. Do whatever you think is best. Then Sarai treated Hagar harshly, so she ran away from Sarai. The angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring of water in the wilderness, the spring that is along the road to Shur. She said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where have you come from and where are you going? Sounds a little similar to the Garden of Eden story as well, doesn't it? She replied, I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit to her authority. He's asking a lot of her. Go and just submit to her. I will multiply greatly your descendants. The angel of the Lord added, so that they will be too numerous to count. Why? Well, presumably because this is Abram's son. He's not going to receive all of the promises, and he is certainly not the chosen heir to be the fulfillment of all things we saw in chapter 12 and 15, but he is Abram's offspring. So God says, I'm going to multiply his descendants. Then the angel of the Lord said to her, you are now pregnant. You're about to give birth to a son. You are to name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard your painful groans. He will be a wild donkey of a man. He will be hostile to everyone, and everyone will be hostile to him. He will live away from his brothers. So Hagar named the Lord who spoke to her, you are the God who sees me. For she said, here I have seen one who sees me. This is why the well was called Be'er Lahoi Roy, something like that. It is located between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar gave birth to Abram's son, whom Abram named Ishmael. Now Abram was 86 years old when Hagar gave birth to Ishmael. So Abram's faith is not without doubt. He's strong, and then he's weak. And here he takes matter into his own hands and listens to his wife and does something that I think can only be portrayed as a weak faith, a doubt, even though God had shown him the covenant and so on. And then Ishmael, of course, becomes part of the story throughout the rest of the Old Testament. Jeff says, sin is sin, whether it's being deceived into judgeable offense or defiling the marriage bed in Abram's case. I don't know what that's referring to exactly. Could you comment sometime on the land promise in 15:18-21? I'm dealing with some. Well, what specifically, Mark, are you asking about? The land, is it the forever part kind of thing? We'll talk more about that. But if as we go, if I don't address that question specifically, let me know. Maybe I'll give you a second here to let me know kind of what would be helpful there. Because we'll see this as we continue to go. All right. So, you know, there's all kinds of personal application we want to draw from this. We are sometimes encouraged that a man of Abram's stature and having been blessed the way he was still has doubts. and that's, you know, reasonable to think through. But remember, we're not first and foremost concerned with, you know, how does this apply to me today? We are first and foremost concerned to see how does this fit into the story of Jesus, because that's what it's all about. That is the grand narrative that is being told here. And we are setting up for that. We'll get to either this week or next week. We are setting up for the establishment of the old covenant and its role in the whole story, which will eventually help us get back to the different views of what we hold to, at least what I hold to, compared to covenant theology and dispensational theology. All right, so we will leave it there for the day and come back and see some more of God's work with Abram tomorrow. Have a great day. Grace and peace to you all.